Hello, everyone coming into the room. I'm Laura Scapatici. I'm the Director of Programs for the Anthroposophical Society in America, and we are so happy to welcome you to the Sacred Gateway online conference. Thank you for being here with us for this very new experience. And we just want to welcome everyone. We're so glad to see you and that you registered, and we want to know where you are in the world. And so if you could please type into the chat where you're joining us from. And if you're just coming into the call, if you could please mute yourself. We're going to keep everybody muted in the beginning. Everybody's coming in from. So please type into the chat. There we go. Fantastic. Okay, perfect. So Santa Barbara, Chicago, Montana, Austin. Oh, so many people here. Oregon, California, Asheville. I can't even say them all. Garden Valley, California, Atlanta, Georgia, Metro Detroit. Thank you for showing up, Detroit. That's great. Michigan, Vermont. And
I'm sorry, I don't know how to, I don't know where to type in. I've never typed into a screen before like this.
Don't worry about that. There's a little chat
button. But I'm from Bismarck, North Dakota.
Woohoo, Bismarck, thanks for being here. Okay, so Tess, if you could just keep muting people as they come in, that'd be super, and we're just about to get started. Okay, so as we get started today, we have a few things to go over, but first, the most important thing we have to do right now is to light our candle. So if you have a candle with you in your room, if you could please light your candle, it'd be great. And I'm going to do that right now, too, with you. And now I'd like to turn it over to Marianne Thietzel, who's hopefully here. And she's going to share our verse that we've been working with this whole time as we've been planning this conference. And I'm gonna turn it. Marianne, are you there?
I am.
Okay, great, thank you.
All that lives throughout the universe lives only through creating within itself the seed of new life. And so too the soul surrenders itself to aging and death, only so that what never dies in us ripens to constant new life.
Thank you, Marianne. Marianne Thietzel is one of the members of the Sacred Gateway Conference Planning Committee, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But first, we just have a little bit of work to do together to create this sacred space. Hopefully, if you've just come in, you've been able to light your candle, and we'd like you to also consider a few more things. Because we're trying to create this sacred space together, we ask that you turn off any devices, other devices, see if you can remove some distractions. If you can, take a deep breath, which I need to do too, and just be present for yourself and to the conference and for the other people that are here with us today. We'd like to ask you to use the 2 feet rule during this conference, and that is use your 2 feet to take care of yourself. So if you need to leave for a little bit, go outside, look at nature, get a snack, do whatever you need to do throughout the conference. If you're attending the full conference, we invite you to take good care of yourself. Your workshops tomorrow are chosen during the conference. So you can go to the resource page that all of you received via email and check out any pre-materials you need for those workshops, the descriptions, and you can go to our registration page and watch videos of pretty much all of the presenters that are with us during this conference. And if you can't choose which workshop, don't worry, because for those of you that registered for the full conference, you'll receive recordings of every workshop that's happening. Please be on time for the main hall events and for the workshops. Please mute yourself when you enter. And also, we will be closing the rooms after about 5 minutes. So please be on time to get into those rooms. And we're going to help you, if you've registered for the full conference, get from this main hall into the workshop rooms. You also have a guide called a quick reference guide that has all the links you need to go from this room to your workshop room. Just as we have with our face-to-face conferences, we're going to have a time where we can reflect together. We do biography work at the Sacred Gateway Conference. We have done that for the past 2 years, and it's been a very enriching experience. Tomorrow morning and Sunday morning, you'll have an opportunity to meet in small groups and share. We really encourage you to go into those breakout rooms when we send you the invitation and meet some people, just as you would with a face-to-face conference. If this is a little nerve-wracking for you, you can make your own decision to stay in the main hall, which will be a quiet space. But we encourage you to push yourself just a little bit. We know people that have been very shy and have gone into these spaces and made friends. And now our conference is about to truly begin. We'd like to open up by getting a sense of place. Now, we are all in our own places right now, connected through our hearts to one another and through this technology. But we were meant to be in a very special place, and that's Detroit, Michigan. And to honor Detroit, we'd like to turn the screen over to Bart Eddy, who is here. He's a Detroit resident with his wife, Suzanne Eddy, who works at the Detroit Waldorf School. And Bart works with youth in the Detroit area in what's called the Brightmoor Makerspace, where they create signs, they build projects together, they do screen printing on t-shirts, they do all kinds of amazing creative things and work together. And maybe Bart can tell you a little bit more about that. But if we can, Bart, if you're here, or Suzanne, if you're here, if you could unmute, and then we'll be able to see you and you can read that poem.
Hello.
Hey, Bart. Yeah, just get a little closer to your computer so okay. We can hear you a little more.
Good. So I just want to give a little background to this very short poem that I'm going to recite for you. And this arises out of our gatherings together with the Central Regional Council several years ago. And at that time, we were studying together the etheric geography of the region, meaning that as the central region, we were looking at the headlands of the Mississippi River way up in northern Minnesota, down into St. Louis, and way down there to the Gulf in New Orleans, and as well as the great cities of Chicago, Detroit, Toledo, Cleveland, and so on, which are also considered to be Midwest. And during this conference, we had an opportunity to give an artistic expression to our own particular region or where we came from. So this is a poem, short poem, is titled Detroit, and it is an attempt, shall we say, to look and find the beauty in the midst of ugliness, if you will. So I will commence with that now. Detroit, rust, beautiful, blessed rust. Dust of Detroit, rust. I wash my face in your history. My heart finds joy and sadness in your salty tears. May I walk upon your carpet? Rust, beautiful, blessed rust. The sun's blood, dust of Detroit, rust. That's it.
Thank you so much, Bart. That was really beautiful. Thank you for sharing that poem and letting us know how it came into being, and just for being here with us and representing Detroit. I know there are some other Detroit people here, so we want to give them an especially warm welcome.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you, Bart. We were actually meant to be in Detroit right now in the beautiful auditorium in the Detroit Waldorf School. And hang on 1 second. Okay, that's great. So there we go. So I want to say that it was a bit of a death not to be in this space, and this conference planning committee really just did an amazing job being able to pivot from a face-to-face conference where we would be in that auditorium right now, we'd be hugging each other, we'd be sharing meals together, we'd be crying, we'd be laughing. This committee did an amazing job. And believe me, it wasn't easy to have this kind of transformation. So I really want to honor them and honor their extraordinary wisdom, their flexibility. They've all experienced loss and transformation in their lives, and we wanted this conference to keep going so they could bring that to you. So I'm just gonna, if the members of the committee, if you could unmute yourself, I'd really love for you to say hello. Marianne Dietzel, you just met. Can you just say where you're from, Marianne? Oh, got it. You're on mute. There we go. Go ahead, Marianne.
Hi, I am from St. Paul, Minnesota.
Thank you so much. And how about Linda Berg?
Linda Berg, and I'm across the Mississippi River in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Amazing. And how about Maureen Tolman Flannery?
I'm here in the great Midwest of Chicago.
Beautiful. And how about Sandra LaGrega?
I'm here in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Thank you so much. And Tess Parker?
Hi, everyone. I'm here from Los Angeles, California.
Thank you. And so even though we can't really give like a loud round of applause, I think you can do that in the reactions like this and say thank you to this amazing committee. Okay. So we have one more honoring we'd like to do before before Patrick Kennedy comes on and offers his keynote. And that is, we'd like to take a moment to honor Joan Allman and her brother, Philip Wolfsheimer. And Joan gave the seed money to make this conference happen. I don't know how many of you might know Joan, but she was an educator, very passionate about early childhood education, and she was a general secretary, a board president for the Anthroposophical Society in America. And so we just wanted to take a minute to honor her. She was with us at our last conference in Hawthorne Valley with her beautiful smiling presence, and then she crossed the threshold that summer. And so we really just want to honor her and feel her with us today. And toward that end, we'd like to, at this time, ask you to please think of the loved ones that you have that have crossed the threshold. And we want to just open up the space to say their names. And we'll actually unmute everyone to do this. You don't need to say the name out loud. You can just say it for yourself, or you can also speak it. And then once we're done, and once we're done with our time together tonight, we'd like to invite you to take that person back into your heart and maybe into your sleep, so they're with you again. And we're gonna do that every day. Anyone that you bring with you to this conference, please bring them back into yourself at the end of the day and keep them with you. Okay, so I'm just gonna maybe test. You can unmute everybody, and we'll just for about 15 seconds or so, go ahead and you can all say your name.
Esther Ramsey, Maria Pasta, Karisha,
Anticipo,
Alvaro,
Karen,
Marielle,
Marie,
Marie,
Rosa.
Patterson.
Frank. Robert Patterson. John. Ashok Fortune.
Catherine.
Leslie Prince Charles.
Richard Rosa.
Shirley Grady.
Christopher.
William. Jason William.
Ruby
We're Newton. Just going to quiet the space again.
Zoom out. So that's
Alvaro.
We'll just mute all right now.
Not bad.
What?
Thanks, everyone. We were able to do that on our Sacred Gateway gathering that we had not too long ago, and we feel it's an important experience. Okay, so now, finally, I have the really honor to welcome Reverend Patrick Kennedy into our space. And I have to say that, Patrick, you're one of the first people that I worked with online for the Anthroposophical Society. And I remember with our first webinar about Michaelmas, you made me cry on the webinar. And what I want to say about that is that the power of your words really stays with people long after the time that they were in the room with you, whether it's the community center we were just in Atlanta with you or the Michaelmas webinar that I was in with you. So I am just so glad that you can be here with us and offer your keynote tonight, which is called True Living is Dying, the Life-Giving Power of Death. Thank you, Patrick. I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you for those very warm and kind words. It's a joy to look. I kind of scanned through many of the faces, and I have the luck in life to know quite a few of you. It's a funny thing, I think, that we should kind of take a moment to feel this moment. To be holding a conference on a renewal and transformation of our understanding and our practices around death and dying in the midst of a pandemic. And that a part of that event that we're all in is severing the ability for us to be together in space. And we're trying to overcome that by being together in time. And that's a weird kind of death too. It's a weird kind of death. But what we want to try to do is actually recover our bond with the experience of dying, re-include it in life, and thereby also re-establish the connections with our loved ones beyond the threshold of death. So this is an effort on Joan's part. I know I had the blessing of working with Joan in the last couple of years of her life in the Washington, D.C. area. It's a great honor to be a part of her intention. Joan Allman. But just this to feel that what we're attempting and will attempt through this medium and what the Anthroposophical Society is attempting to support is this renewal of these connections and the reclaiming of death as a part of life. So it is such an honor for me to be invited by the committee so warmly and to follow up on my colleagues who've come before me to be a part of this event, and to try tonight to contemplate with you the mysteries of dying. One of the things that we notice right now, of course, is that there's this extraordinarily intense attention right now on a certain kind of suffering and dying with those who are suffering from the virus known as the coronavirus or COVID-19. Watching these numbers, these statistical numbers around who's sick and who's dying and who has died. And I just decided to look at some other statistics. And for example, in the course of one day, something like 360,000 people will die on the earth. No. My mistake. It's actually around 150,000 will die. 360,000 will be born. Births, children, mothers screaming, children coming into the world, being born into this earth. Actually, we can imagine the whole earth covered with this gateway, sacred gateways all around the planet, 7 billion plus sacred gateways. I remember when my first child was born, I called out to my wife, "You are a portal." Human beings pass through you into the earth. Extraordinary. And human souls leave their earthly body and rise up into heaven. So the whole earth is actually this living, breathing being in which souls are pouring down into it and pouring out of it every single second of every day. But I'm not the first with this amazing understanding. I was so delighted to find Brother Walt Whitman said it in his poem, To Think of Time. Not a day passes, not a minute or a second, without an accouchement, that is French for birth, accouchement. Not a day passes, not a minute or a second, without a corpse. Contemplating this truth, this reality, the breathing of the earth, the way she is breathing in living souls, can widen our whole sense of awe at the beautiful in and out of this gateway. I'm here looking at this strange little digital gateway in Vaughan, Ontario. It's a little bit north of Toronto. I'm across the border for many of you in the country of Canada. And I am right now in the main classroom of the Seminary of the Christian Community in North America, where I work as a director. And I'm a priest in the Christian community and work at the congregation here in Toronto. And I've been a priest for 14 years this April. And as a priest, I would say one of the ways you could describe the core task is to stand with people at that gateway. Or you could say standing, walking with people in their dying. And by that, I mean a lot of things. And that's what I want to look at today. I want to look with you at some of the ways that we can transform, actually, our understanding of the nature of death. Death can cease to be an endpoint when we transform it into a process, when we transform it into the process of dying. So that's what I'm going to try tonight with you to contemplate. What is this process of dying? So maybe I will say just a word or two other just about myself, so you are also a little more oriented. I was consecrated 14 years ago. I was 30 years old. So if you think I look young now, try to imagine no facial hair, no little salt in the hair, 30 years old. And I wasn't even a year into my priesthood. It was January of 2007. It was near to Epiphany, January 6th, and already I was about to have my second funeral. And it was for a man I had never met. I'm sorry, the second funeral was for someone I had known in Pennsylvania a little bit. And then a day later, I get a phone call. Someone has died in another community, but this one is a teenager. And they've died in a car accident. And I've never met their family. And I'm called into that situation. Now, I had never lost a child. I'd never known someone personally who had lost a child. I remember driving down the 4.5 hours to meet with this family for the first time ever, to meet this soul. And I remember praying in the car, wondering, how can I ever possibly be of help? And I knew if I tried to be a comfort, if I tried to be somehow offer my life wisdom as my 30-year-old self, I would fail. I would not be able to provide all of those things. I knew only one single thing, and that was, I can walk with them and the soul who has died through this journey into the world beyond death. I can be a kind of midwife. Now, I'm one of the few men on this call. I think I went through the whole, scrolled through the whole list there. I have no issues with calling myself a midwife. I hope that's okay with everyone. Because it really matches my experience of death as a birth. And that was so real to me, and the rites and rituals and sacred sacraments that we have that help a soul transition into the world beyond and help a community accompany that soul through this powerful transition. I knew I could do that. And to experience when you have a community and a process that matches up with what is actually happening for a soul who has died and who is entering this journey. To experience how the spiritual world can pour into that moment and transform a tragedy into one of the most beautiful events that we all were blessed to ever be a part of. It doesn't take away the tragedy, the loss, but it gifts into that, it pours into that a gift that is so big, so abundant, so full of life. It changed our lives forever, for the better. This one simple example to bring to you to explain how, or to show maybe and reveal a little bit how a death can actually be a source of life. And I'm sure you have had that experience in yourself, in your own life, in your own communities, where a death in a community or in a life can actually be the secret key that unlocks a whole new world, that causes the scales to fall from the eyes and to suddenly see everything in a whole new light and to have the feeling, now you know what really matters. So with some of those images in mind, I'd like to look at some of the things that dying is. And we're in the midst of this new school apparatus, gonna do some old school stuff. As I told Laura today, I'm gonna get up and I'm gonna move to the chalkboard here with you all. Can you hear me okay? All right. So I'm just going to do some sentences. Dying is, can you read that? It's not backwards, right? Very good. Dying is letting. Now that's a strange word to leave on its own, letting. But I do that on purpose. Of course, we are familiar with letting in terms of letting go. But you can also let things be. You can let things come. You can let things out. You can let something that you are clinging to, gripping, you can let it free. And this letting activity, this ability to release the clench is a part of the deep activity of dying, the practice of dying. And it contains, you could say, something of the core expression of what we just described as the breathing of the earth. You could say the whole of human existence is a breathing between expanding into the cosmos, which we'll hear about tomorrow, I hope, from Mary Adams. Can't wait to be in your workshop. This expansion, this going into the periphery, and this contraction and concentration. And you could see I make my fist like this. You could say living between the experience of being a point and the experience of being in the periphery. And being embodied in a body is to you could say, gather ourselves up and to a hold, to take a hold of the earth, a part of the earth that is ours, to take a hold of our life. And if we've left the heavenly worlds and we've taken come into a body and are living in this body, it's become our new home. And we go through the course of our life forgetting where we've come from and really making a deep home here in this body. So much so that when you look at me, you don't see Laura. You see Patrick. That means that the cellular structure of my face, which is made out of silica and carbons and so forth, the same substance as the earth, bears the signature of my being. My soul is radiating out through my eyes, my nose, my face, the shape of my ear, right down into my thumbprint. My spirit has totally imprinted its being all the way down into my inner organs, all the way through my toes. I have gotten to know this body very well, And by now, after, let's say, 80 years, we've made a very close relationship. And so this capacity to let go, to release, to let, is a core verb, a core activity that is a part of what dying is. And you know in yourself, in your own lives, how much life doesn't happen because we're clinging to things where it's time to let them go or let someone out the house or let someone you like not like you. Or, and on and on. We could spend the whole evening talking about letting. Letting, dying is letting. And in a secret way, that means saying yes. It's kind of the deep inner opening to life. Because actually, kind of like life is usually happening to us, and our relationship with it a lot of the time is like, no, I don't want it to be like that. I don't want the technology to fail. My children, it's Toronto, so 2 days ago it was snowing. Okay, it's April. My child's like, no, crying. Like, how could it be? It's spring. Like, well, it is snowing. Don't the flakes look beautiful? How can we let reality in? Because life is what is. And we actually have the ability to fight life. So dying to life actually lets life in. We can be fighting life our whole lives. But when we learn to practice letting, we are learning to let the force of life into us. I had to go through this with this virus. I basically just didn't want it to be. This isn't really happening, you know. I mean, we didn't get to celebrate Easter. I don't know if you could possibly imagine what that's like for a priest. But the moment I allowed it, the moment I let what is happening in, whole new creative forces were born, new creative ideas. What can we do? How can I serve? How can I meet the needs of people? But as long as I was doing this, I was suffering and I was in denial and I wasn't letting life in. So dying is letting. Dying is also, you can feel it as a part of this, opening and expanding. That's readable still? Heading downhill, but it's okay. We'll keep it back up. Dying is opening and expanding. So I'm going to reveal to you a little bit when I grew up. I'm a child of the 80s, no doubt. And a very important film, cultural event in the life of children and young people in the late 70s and early 80s were the Star Wars films. For those of you who did not watch them or participate in them, for those of you who might even have strong antipathies against them, I beg of you to open a little bit and listen to me tell the story of Obi-Wan Kenobi. Obi-Wan Kenobi was a master Jedi. That is, he is trained in the interstellar worlds in a kind of spiritual knighthood. And these spiritual knights work with a life force that permeates all things that they call the Force. That is the source of their power. And their swords are made of light. They're called lightsabers. But the forces of darkness are on the rise, and they're called the Empire. And their lead dark spiritual knight is Lord Vader, Darth Vader. And Lord Vader, this is all a part of the key mythologies of our age. I'm just gonna put that out there. Lord Vader is someone who has picked up the dark side of the Force as the source of his power and united himself and is blending with machines. Sound familiar? He's uniting, he's actually sustaining his life by actually melding with machine. And he draws his power from fear and cruelty and power over others. And Obi-Wan Kenobi shows himself, the one who is on the light side of the Force, through his life and service to be a good and kind old man. He's an older man. And he has found perhaps a young man who could be the source of hope for the future against overcoming the Empire, the evil Empire, which, by the way, has created, almost finished, with a moon-sized machine called the Death Star. And this Death Star is able to destroy planets. So this tiny little rebel force is launching a rebellion. They want to overcome the Empire, right? And they're making their attempt. And Obi-Wan Kenobi's in there as well. He gets on the Death Star and he has his combat moment with Lord Vader. He's going to overcome him. And you're a child and you're watching this and you're like, come on, Obi-Wan, you got this. Beat Lord Vader. And then you start watching him and he's like not trying hard anymore. He's kind of, and his light sword is kind of fizzling a little bit. And I remember the feeling as a child going, oh no, wait, what is he doing? And then you can see he kind of is not resisting. And he lets Darth Vader strike him. And in an instant, his cloak sinks to the ground in a heap and he's gone. But there's nothing inside the cloak. And it shows Darth Vader looking down, going, what? But he's like, well, I've got other things to do. And he moves on. So that's kind of the last we hear for a while of Obi-Wan. And you're wondering what's happening. Meanwhile, the young guy who's supposed to save everything, Luke Skywalker, he's in a machine and he's trying to stop this incredible Death Star, this moon, this flying machine of planetary destruction. And there's one weakness in the whole thing. And if you can fly your machine right close by and shoot a shot right in, you can destroy it. And he can't do it. Nobody can do it. Nobody can hit it. Suddenly, he hears the voice of Obi-Wan Kenobi speaking to him. And what he says is, you need to take off the technology. Right? You need to take off the technology, which is this subnatural power, subnatural electrical force, and you need to reach up to the life force that is just above the sense world. Use the Force, Luke. Don't use all this technology. And there's this amazing scene where he takes off the headset and puts it off. And you can see him kind of tuning in to this other power. And then he's able, of course, to fly in and shoot the shot that actually destroys the Death Star. And of course, it's the happy ending, which is all fine and good. But for, as a child, what mattered to me there, and what I'm bringing this up is, despite all of the power in the world that the Empire had, it was actually the connection between someone on the other side of death and someone on the, in the living side that could find the secret for the future. And I knew Ben is everywhere. Obi-Wan Kenobi has expanded. He has now no longer limited himself to the single physical body. He's actually now can be found anywhere Luke goes. Dying, I thought he was overcome. I thought he was defeated by the Dark Lord. No, he was actually, he's larger than him now. The dead actually expand. When we die, we are the genie in the bottle. All that story about the genie in the bottle, that comes from this term spirit, genius, genius, which comes inside the bottle, and the spirit that comes out of the bottle is like a cloud that expands. Those are the old images of those who knew spiritual realities, and they painted them in stories, and now we have the terrible Aladdin and the lamp. Ignore that for a second. The true secret is every human being is a genie in a bottle. So if the bottle opens, what happens is we expand, and we expand in every direction. And I guess I'm plugging Mary Adams's workshop here right now. Anyway, she's gonna take us on this journey of life after death through the planetary spheres as described also, I think, in Rudolf Steiner's work. There he describes how when you've laid aside your etheric forces and your memories after 3 days and you begin to expand, you actually fill out the first phase. If you imagine the distance between the moon and the earth, the first realm of existence that you now fill is like the dead are the atmosphere of the earth all the way up to the sphere of the moon. So opening and expanding. The picture of what death and dying reveals to us is dying is an opening and an expanding. So anytime we are practicing something in our lives where we ourselves are growing beyond our borders, expanding our souls, our consciousness, our compassion, our conscience into the world, when we are expanding it inwardly into spirit realms, we are dying. It is the process of dying that is the secret of all growing out beyond our own skin. So, the next thing that dying is learning. Dying is learning. And Laura, I thought I would have my little clock in here. Whenever you think I should stop, you just give me that like wave or 5 minutes or anything like that. Dying is learning. That one is relatively easy, I think, for us. It's familiar to us in some ways, right? In the sense of look back on your life. In those places where we have most fallen down, most made mistakes, most suffered and went through the greatest hardships, those have the most power to transform who we are. Learning is nothing other than I was this way, I'm going through something, now I'm different. Right? First grade, I learned the letters. Now I can write in second grade. I'm going on to third grade and I'm reading. That seems relatively simple, but actually it's extraordinary. There is a time in people's lives when they can't read. They are closed off from a whole world. There is a threshold. There is a gateway. There's a gate between them and this knowledge. And the only way to pass through that gate is to learn. Learning is dying. But I want to look at that also in some other ways in particular. Because we come back to this picture of who we are. Because we can learn going out into the world. And we can learn inwardly. I'm just going to use the arrow that way. By going into spirit. And the way into both of them is actually almost exactly the same, they're just a different direction. So if I want to go into spirit, most of the spiritual guides basically lead us into a couple of things. One, if you want to understand the spiritual world, you should start by learning about it. Take an interest in it. What have the great guides of the world ever said about it? Read some great books. You know, I can recommend a few. This is a pretty good one. Incredible descriptions about the seven realms of soul and the seven aspects of spirit land that you can learn about, take in ideas, think about, be interested in. And anytime I'm interested in something, I'm doing this expanding. When I'm interested in something, I go with my interest into the thing. I pass along the lines of my attention and interest into the thing I am attending to. And as I read something like Rudolf Steiner's book, Life Between Birth, Death and New Birth, and hear descriptions of the journey between in the celestial spheres, wonder grows and awe. Because what's happening is I'm being interested in those worlds, and those worlds are actually coming into me in the form of thoughts. I'm leaving my little house. You know, you can think everybody's in their little chair, they're in their house, they crack open that book and they're going this way, towards spirit. And spirit is coming in to us. Our soul becomes the stage on which spirit beings reveal themselves actually in the form of thoughts. But then our spiritual guides say, well, if you'd like to go further in that realm, you should close your eyes. You should close your senses, but stay awake. And now think those thoughts, but think them in the way that you begin to feel them. Feel what it feels like to expand, for example, to the sphere of the moon. Feel what it feels like if I have been filled with hatred in my life on earth, that I will be alone in my life after death. Feel that. And something starts to happen as you enter into that inner world, you start to feel, and something starts to breathe into you from that other world through the feeling. And then maybe you touch even into that sphere of actually encountering beings. And feeling their will for the world. Their love of humanity. Or their need. So that through the soul forces of our thinking, feeling, and willing, we can actually learn, starting here on earth, to actually begin to expand into those worlds that we will do after death. In fact, Rudolf Steiner will say, if you haven't taken an interest in the spiritual world while you are alive, why would you think you would see it when you've died? You ready yourself with sight by beginning now, here. And this learning, what I mean by that is so much more than book learning. This learning involves then what the guidance is of closing your eyes, closing your senses, and basically practicing deep sleep while you're awake. And sleep is the little brother of death. So staying inwardly awake and becoming aware of the part of you that is alive even when you die. That's why you meditate. That's why those directions are there. Meditation and prayer is so that you can awaken the experience of that part of you that is beyond your body. But you can do all of that same work. You can go this way as well. You can go into the world. And through interest, becoming wonder, becoming awe. If you just think like what, the word awe, you almost can't just say, oh, I was full of awe, right? You have to say, oh, whoa, did you see that? You can feel the whole human being wants to do that when they're in a state of, oh, whoa. You go to the top of the mountain, you see for 1,000 miles around, whoa. You go with that. Your soul expands through interest, wonder, and awe into the other. Through feeling, when we bring our feeling into that, into our relationship with the other, then we are feeling our way into the experience of the other. That's the riskier one. We talked about that once, Laura, with our Initiation of the Heart series. This feeling into the experience of the other, which then becomes empathy, becomes compassion. And the third level where we can get involved is then on the level of our will. And when our will is actually expanding beyond our own will, usually we're totally, completely subsumed in our own desires, intentions, purposes. I've got a lot to do. I'm busy. I'm important. If I can stop. See, all of these, by the way, all of these require stopping. Stop and look. You can't have interest if you're busy. You can't pray and meditate and do inner work if you don't stop your life and make time. All of this work involves stopping, which means dying. That means my life, which is going in a direction, I stop it and I make time for this to grow beyond myself, to do that on the level of will. Then I feel the need of the other becomes my will. I feel solidarity with the other. I feel conscience. Solidarity, conscience. And action. Can't be feeling conscience and just leave it there. It means I'm responsible. And if I act, if I work now, suddenly, like I've changed my whole life right now, basically to match this moment in time. The things that are happening with the virus has caused my entire life to be upended and transformed, but not just because somebody else did it, but also because there are new attempts and ways I'm trying to make myself available to those who are isolated and alone. That burns into my heart. I have to do something. I am their suffering. my will can only be now in them, to be there for them. So now my will has completely died to myself, and I am coming to life in the will of the other. And all of that is a mirror image of what we can do inwardly. Also here, we meet beings and we experience, may your will work through me. May the being of love live and work through me, because I think you're a little better at it than I am. But if I've met your will, and I think it's a good one, I want you to be able to work into the world. So this all involves, this is what I mean by learning these things. So I'm going to move a little bit quicker now through these, because they just flow from this one. So opening, letting, opening and expanding, learning, healing. Dying is healing. So if I'm doing this, if I'm letting, if I'm opening and expanding, if I'm learning in the sense of overcoming my limited self and starting to let the world in and the other in, what is happening is I'm being healed. And what I'm being healed of is the fundamental problem of self-centeredness and selfishness. See, the great divine antidote, medicine, for self-centered selfishness is death. That's what the writers of the ancient book Genesis tried to say. Yes, you've taken the apple for yourself out of selfishness. You've jumped the gun and you have an experience of self too soon. You're at risk of completely being subsumed in egotism. So we are going to give you death to resolve that problem. Death not as an endpoint, but because while we're alive, we're concentrated in this clench of me. And dying is the process whereby I expand into the world. That is the secret power of the title of the book, Breath Becomes Air. This is a very interesting, beautifully written book. I'm in the middle of reading, where he's wrestling with the nature of moral power, moral reality, meaning, and physical reality. He's a neurosurgeon, back specialist. I won't pronounce his name right. Breath Becomes Air is the book. Breath Becomes Air, that is something that is the human substance of breath, when it passes out of me, becomes air. Now it's a part of the world. The air in me is mine, it's human, and then it becomes a part. I breathe myself out, I exhale out into the world. That is dying. Dying is exhaling our soul and spirit into the universe. We are enforced to feel what it feels like to be in the other. So if you were not very good at compassion on Earth, luckily for us, there's something called Kamaloka. Kamaloka is spiritually enforced, thanks to us, we want it, compassion. We live in the experiences of the other. What was it like to be around me? I'm gonna get to go through that after I die. Hallelujah. Lucky me. Because it's healing. It heals me of my own self-centeredness. So the learning and that I've done through opening and expanding and letting brings about a healing of the self, healing of selfishness. And all of that you can see culminates into this highest form of giving them. Dying is actually giving. Dying is giving. Of those births that happen every day, I read some 90,000 women per year die in childbirth. Like it is a life, it is a gateway. It is the gateway, death and birth, right there. And it is, even in our medical world, still such a thing, that 90,000 women die in childbirth. Now that might be numbers around the world, but it gives us that picture that for another being coming into the world, so that they can, a greater being is risking its life. It's, and yeah, I won't go further into that. But that picture, right? And then if you've been a young parent, oh boy, are you dying? Like, your whole world upended. No schedule, what? Crying loud. Oh God. All of the methods of the military in terms of torture are applied to parents by their infant. Loud sounds at unexpected times of crying. Your schedule, your sleep schedule totally ruined. It's the breakdown of the human personality. And there was an article that came out in the Washington Post saying, why do parents still have children when they describe how painful and difficult it is to raise them? Because of this. We feel in our bones to hold my life only for myself is not really living. In fact, Angelus Silesius would say in one of his beautiful, the old Middle European mystic, who kind of was a master of these little phrases, he said, now in my own translation, unless you die before you die, you'll truly perish when you die. Unless you die before you die, you'll truly perish when you die. Because dying to myself for the other is a giving. It is a giving of who I am. And when I'm giving who I am, now I'm coming into the highest level of dying, and that is dying is loving. Dying is loving. And that is why the ancients understood that the powers and creator spirits who are gifting us with the power of life are also, you could say, have their being in love. Because they could experience the celestial body of the sun is giving itself for the life of the world. All of the life on the earth is only thanks to what is radiating down to us from this celestial radiant glory-making orb. That shining and that radiance, the sun is not drawing on some other source in order to give us that power. It's actually consuming itself to give this light and warmth to the earth. It's dying. The sun is dying, and it's dying through self-giving. So the highest form of dying is self-giving. And whenever it reaches that level, it engenders life. That's the extraordinary thing, is the sun is dying and life is happening. Sun is through that, through the action of giving of itself, others can live. And that is why dying is living. Is life. And you can feel it. If I'm living my life, holding everything in and back, fighting reality, holding myself back because I'm afraid of what people will think, Oh no, what is everyone gonna think? I talked about Star Wars on a webinar. I could feel it in me just a little bit. Like, uh-oh, should I do it? Should I not? Should I do it? It's okay. It's okay. People, if they do these polls, they're less afraid of death than of public speaking. And the reason is social death is much worse than physical death, and everyone knows it. If everyone turns against me, doesn't like me, that's already bad enough. If someone says, if my good friends betray me, if I'm not true to the giving of who I am to the world, actually what gives life to the world won't be given. Because the secret is, we are the sacred gateway. Because that world of spirit is actually, the only way spirit is coming in directly into the earth is through human hearts. It is passing through us into life. And if I'm holding myself back because I'm afraid, because I'm, who's going to take care of me? And well, what if they, and you can feel all of this clench of fear. Then I'm actually keeping the gateway closed. And when I become ready to die, willing to just give who I am as best I can, something else can start to pour into me that the world's been waiting for. That's why Nelson Mandela said at the end of his life, looking back, do not laud me because of my accomplishments, but because I got up after I fell down again and again and again. Now, that's not a direct quote. It's something like that. It was about his getting back up after falling down. Because that energy of overcoming the power of gravity which rules on the earth, that's spirit energy, and that happens through humans on the earth. We are the sacred gateway. So our dying here on the earth is what allows spirit to flow in and readies us for the great dying at the end of our life. That, my dear friends, is what I wanted to bring to you tonight. These seven qualities of the process of dying, so that hopefully a little bit of a feeling could come through of how dying is truly living. Thank you.
I just like to leave a little space after you speak, Patrick, because it's so profound. You made me cry again. Okay, so there's so much there. Thank you so much for opening our conference and this new experience with all these amazing thoughts to carry us into the next 2 days. Yeah, thank you. We thought we would, if it's okay, we'll take a little time where people can type questions in. We're going to keep everybody mute until the very end when we say goodbye to each other and take our loved ones away with us. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. So we're seeing lots of thank yous, but I'd like to open it up. If anybody has a question, you can please type it into the chat and we can share that. I was very appreciative of the Star Wars. Thank you. Also, child movies. And it's such a compelling story. And I never thought about the words like Death Star and all of these things that you said. Really amazing. Yeah. Okay. So, Caitlin is asking, yes, Obi-Wan.
Nice.
Cheers to Obi-Wan, that's right. Can you speak to unexpected or sudden death is one of the questions. And I know you talked about that, I think in the beginning, where you had to go to a death where you didn't know people and that was a sudden death, but maybe you can speak to that a bit more.
I mean, what I tried to do tonight is actually just kind of give an overarching relationship to the inner spiritual processes that work in all dying. Each situation then asks for a completely unique approach. It's going to, I mean, if this were easy, we wouldn't need to keep doing it. This is the great schooling we are in. And a sudden death, you could say, is first of all, sudden because we weren't expecting it. But even just living, beginning to live with the idea, for example, I could leave the room tonight and I could die. Like, have I built into my expectations that death belongs to my life? Have I done that with everyone around me? Like, all of my people will also have their moment where they will die. If I'm not doing that, I'm not yet fully in reality. So what will happen is reality is going to probably come to meet me in an intense way and ask me to include more of reality in it. So each sudden death, each unexpected death has to be looked at completely uniquely though. And if you take into the idea that death is such a significant experience, which we didn't even talk about today, for the journey of the soul beyond death, the moment of death, as well as all those around in the community where the death has happened, then if you understand that nothing happens without purpose and meaning, then death belongs to the great story of what is sometimes called karma. Now, that doesn't mean fate. I think there are accidental deaths. There are unplanned, there are things that aren't necessarily in the story. Because of the world that we live in, there has to be a free space for accidental things to take place. But they're always then reincorporated into the stories that we are living. They become like these essential nodal points that transform every person around them. Like, for example, think of a suicide. Now, this is one of the ways that people die that is most impactful for me in my life. But one of the things that I notice is that everyone starts asking, what could I have done differently? Every person who is in relationship to some degree seems to suddenly be confronted with the idea, reviewing themselves their whole life, not just the person who's died having a life review. Everyone's starting to go through, wait a second, where did I miss something? Did I miss an opportunity? Did I miss a sign? And usually you'll be confronted, yeah, there was a moment. And you notice suddenly when someone has, when you have a sudden death like that, oh, I'm not separate at all from people. The illusion that I'm living my life separately is completely shattered because I suddenly realize that's connected to me. And there was a Netflix television series that tried to meditate on that called 13 Reasons Why, which was somewhat controversial. But it was very, very important, I think, because it just looked at that, like, who isn't implicated if someone doesn't decide to stay? And yet, of course, I don't want to overemphasize that, but it's just the sense of connection. So the way I'm looking at that right now is just that quality that those moments can be an awakener to the moral fabric that we are all woven into with one another. This moral fabric is actually an invisible reality in which we are all walking. And sudden deaths have this effect that it tugs on those threads. There's a sudden rip and everyone's like, whoa, what just happened? why'd that happen? And suddenly everything starts to shift and you have to reweave the fabric. So that for me today is one response. One would always have to look at a very specific situation. What kind of sudden deaths? Rudolf Steiner, in his book of lectures, The Karma, Manifestations of Karma, something I can only recommend to everyone right now, Manifestations of Karma. And there he looks at many different kinds of deaths, natural disasters, technological accidents, diseases, all kinds of things. And it's so helpful, those thoughts, Manifestations of Karma. Thanks, Tess. Yeah, that's the one. So there's a beginning of an answer.
Thank you, Patrick. And there's lots of questions coming through and you answered a few right there. So I really appreciate that. And okay, so there are a couple. I wanna address Kendra's asking a question about how you can support someone that you've lost to COVID when you're unable to say goodbye. And how do you recommend holding vigil? We're actually doing a vigil of the heart tomorrow. That was developed particularly for this time. So I want folks to know that, and Linda Berg and Ellen Huffschmidt are carrying that tomorrow. So hopefully you're registered to join us tomorrow to experience that. Patrick, maybe you want to touch on that. And then the other question I have related to the pandemic from Alinda. So there's this question, what if you can't be there to say goodbye? And then what's your picture in terms of what's going on with the pandemic in terms of expansion and contraction and breathing?
Oh, gosh.
So, you know, like put those two together? Not really, probably, but.
I think to turn our attention so far to look at the whole phenomena of what's happening right now would be too far for me. But I really wanted to instead give you all these things to take with you into your looking. Rather than me now do it, I really wanted to try to give you something that you can take, these seven, and kind of use them as a way of seeing that allows us to look into ourselves, into each other. Of course, the worst thing would be like if you were to come up to someone and say, you know, I think you need to do some opening and some expanding. You look a little bit, you know, this isn't about what we can prescribe for others, but rather look to ourselves and then understand people in processes of them. Oh, they're going through a wrestling with this, and feel and compassion for that rather than judgment. So if we leave that aside and just look at it was an amazing story. I think it was This American Life. It was an interview with a man who has been an emergency responder in New York City for something like 19 years. I don't know, 17 to 19 years. And he describes a story of a woman who contracts the disease, who comes home really sick. They're both in the medical profession. He's, a nurse at a hospital. I'm sorry, I'm not getting the details exactly right. He calls into work and says, I need to stay home and take care of my wife. And the work says, we need you in here. You got to get in here. Her symptoms were a little down. He thought, okay. He goes in, he comes home and finds her dead. And he wasn't there. And the first responder goes, you know, and he's there and he's out there on the street and he says, something happened to me, because in all my years, I've seen it all. I have seen it all. You have to imagine a good New York accent. And every time I could put my arm around them and say, you know, I know. I know. They cry on my shoulder, and somehow something would be moved and released in that, in the actual touch of each other. And today, and on that day, I had to stay 6 feet away. And for the first time, he said, in all my years, I had to go, I went into my truck and I cried. All the stuff that I've seen, I never cried. But the day I couldn't actually comfort somebody, I cried. So I think for us to grieve the loss of being severed from one another, to serve what is being asked of us by the health departments, is a good first step, because it is terrible. But my dear colleague Cindy wrote a beautiful little thing called "No One Dies Alone." No one dies alone. That expansion process begins to happen, and we start to move into that realm where the dead are living. And those who accompany us from the other side, our loved ones who have gone ahead of us into that realm, are there in different ways. Each one of us has a guardian angel that walks with us throughout the course of our biography. They are there. And the being who is the great guide in all self-giving for the life of the world that we call Christ is there for every single human soul. And when we open our thinking, our feeling, and willing into the realm in which they live, guess what? They're a soul. Well, we're a soul too. So when we send our attention and practice that, and I think different ones of you will be working on those practices in your workshops, when we practice that, we can keep that link alive. See, that's the thing, is the bond of love is impossible to sever with death. As I was just showing, actually, it's partly what dying means. True love is a part of dying. Or you could say dying becomes life through love. So with all those wonderful little words, what I mean to say is we can be with a person and attend them. Even once the disease is over, things happen where, for example, a coroner's office won't allow you to come in. It happens. It happens all kinds of times. And you just have to be creative as a community. And I know there are different kinds of things people could do. I'm not going to go into exact practices right now, but I would just say you can do things. On Sunday, I believe I'm asked to speak about consecrating our dying. I'll look at the process of actual physical death, what we go through in different stages, also then into the processes we go through after death, and how, for example, in the Christian community, we have rituals that match those special moments in a very specific way to try to reveal the question for the community that we have to solve with each moment. What is required of a community around the moment of death for the 3 days of life review and vigil? What's kind of essential there? What's required of a community then after that, when they leave aside that and go on in their journey and so forth? So those, what can we do for those who have died, and how can we also, in doing that, receive the greatest comfort one could ever have? Because you stay connected. But I'm having this moment, Laura, I'm having this moment where I'm tired of listening to myself. I can't anyone else wants to listen to me.
Oh,
are we getting to that point where
we are. We are at that time. It's time to close our space together. And so we are gonna see you again on Sunday. Thank you for being here with us tonight. And in just a minute, I'm going to stop the recording and people can say thank you and hello to each other, and then we'll go. So thank you, everybody, for being here tonight. And thank you, Patrick Kennedy, for your beautiful sharing and for opening the conference in this way. So we're just going to, I'm going to stop the recording. We're going to unmute and everyone can say goodbye and they can clap wildly if they'd like to, which I had a request for clapping wildly, just so you know. Okay. Bye, everybody.